everyone. We are back with this week's episode of the First in Tech podcast. I am your host, sports editor Andrew Schnitker.
And I'm your boy, assistant sports editor Nick Sinopoli. Great to be back on First in Tech, Andrew. We have a lot of great stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we definitely do, Nick. That was quite the win for NC State last Thursday night.
You think so? I mean, it was only the first win for the Wolfpack over a ranked opponent in Carter Finley Stadium since 1992, which was a long time before we were born.
Yes, good few years before you and I were even considered that happened. So definitely a long time coming for NC State. And really, I mean, the Wolfpack just impressed me with the way they played. It's like Lamar Jackson, reigning Heisman winner, still had a Lamar Jackson game. He had 427 yards of total offense. And NC State wins by two touchdowns and really controls from start to finish. I mean, there's moments where Louisville's kind of threatening with a big player getting back into it, but there was never any like, oh my God, Louisville just scored three touchdowns and took the lead, like it's over. NC State stayed in the got into the driver's seat early and stayed there, really.
And there were a couple of times where NC State, you know, tried to give it away. There were two back-to-back three and outs, I believe, but then of course the pick six by Jermaine Pratt, all but sealing the deal for NC State. And yeah, I mean, it was an incredible performance by NC State, a dominating performance. I think that NC State dominated the game more than a 14-point win, in my opinion. I think that was more of a three-touchdown win at what it looked like, you know, barring that first little mess up in the end in the red zone by NC State, kind of getting cute with those gadget plays, and then Ryan Finley fumbling the ball. But, I mean, it was really just number 24 NC State against number 17 Lamar Jackson. I mean, that was it. While it was tough going into the game saying all you have to do is stop Lamar Jackson, it's a really hard thing to say, but that's exactly what they did. Is while Lamar Jackson was going to be that incredible dual threat quarterback, I mean, they still got the job done. And I mean, hey, NC State moving up to the polls, number 20, not much more you could say about that. I thought it was an impressive victory for the Wolfpack.
Yeah, and I think it's time for something that, if this continues, is going to become a regular segment. It's time for a little Ryan Finley appreciation minute. I mean, the man has done everything for the Pack this year. He worked on his deep ball over the summer. He worked on his two-minute drill over the summer. And you're seeing that. We'll talk more about his play later when we get to our phenomenal guest for this week, Joe Ovius, but he hasn't thrown an interception. He's got the longest streak in the FBS active without an interception. I mean, at this point, it's getting to the point where it almost irks me a little bit when I see like top 10 quarterback lists and maybe even a little bit of Heisman talk, and I don't see Ryan Finley in that conversation.
You know, he's a good quarterback. I mean, I think he's a little bit better than a game manager in that he makes smart decisions. He goes through his reads and he doesn't force the ball a lot. He either throws it away or tries to go to the check down, and usually his check down is heck, Nyheim Hines or Jalen Samuels, and those two pretty good playmakers to have at your disposal. But yeah, I mean, he's throwing the ball downfield more. You mentioned the 2-minute drill, and that is probably my favorite part of this NC State team thus far this season. I feel like it's been every time at the end of the first half that NC State, you know, either gets a field goal or a touchdown. But
don't count your chickens before they hatch on those field goals, though.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, you know, when you look at how far Finley has progressed, I look at two plays against the Louisville game. It was that deep ball pass to Kelvin Harmon, where Kelvin Harmon just literally that dude is a monster, just having the guy on the bat on his back 10 yards into the end zone, and then an incredible over-the-shoulder catch by Steph Lewis, another deep ball through about a 30-yard pass. But yeah, Ryan Finley averaging 7.9 yards per attempt, and he's finally starting to mold into an NFL-style quarterback, excuse me.
Try saying that three times fast. But yeah, you do mention Harmon and Lewis. I think part of it for Finley, too, though, is, I mean, the weapons he has. I mean, we all know, I don't think I need to say it again, what Jalen Samuels can do, which is everything, but I'm going to. Jalen Samuels can do everything. Kelvin Harmon has that big play, big catch ability, going up for those contested jump
balls.
Yeah,
he's good for one to put him on SportsCenter at least once a week.
Steph Lewis adds that speed element down the field. So I really like what the Wolfpack has been able to figure out with spreading the ball around to Jay Sam, Harmon, and Lewis.
Don't forget Jacoby Myers.
Jacoby Myers, who has the huge play against Florida State. And then finally get the run game going when Will Richardson comes back, who, by the way, along with Finley, made the All-ACC team for this past week. Ever since the fourth quarter against Florida State, Nyheim Hines, who had 102 yards and two scores against Louisville, has been phenomenal. He's really added a new element to that rushing attack.
In my opinion, I think I'm the biggest Nyheim Hines fan out there. I'm going to go ahead and say it. The guy, you know, after stepping into a big role, having to fill some big shoes in replacing 1,000-yard rusher Matt Days, the guy has more than filled those shoes. He's has 513 yards on the season, which is surprising to say that. I mean, he's already halfway to the century mark. The 1,000-yard mark. And the guy has the speed to just burst through those holes, having over 100 yards and two touchdowns against Louisville. I think he's finally becoming that bell cow running back that NC State needs, and that he will be the rest of the season and his senior season next year. So I love to see how Nyheim Hines has progressed and really, you know, almost, you know, developed back into that running back he was coming out of high school. Because in high school, he was recruited as a running back, and then when he moved to state, he made the transition to wide receiver. So moving forward, I'd like to see what they're going to do with Hines, because Jalen Samuels is going to be gone after this year. You wonder if you'll see Nyheim Hines more in that receiving back role a little more. But right now, the guy is doing incredible work up and down the field, just running through defenders, but mostly running around defenders. Remember that double spin move he had this on Thursday? That was incredible.
Yeah, that was something else. And I think, you know, that's helped. And of course,
I think he's the X factor. And in that defense, it's like in that offense, you've got all these guys. You've got a Jalen Samuels who is gonna do what he's gonna do every week. You've got Ryan Finley who's distributing the ball well, and you've got those incredible wide receivers. But Nyheim Hines really brings around that other aspect of that team that really just makes it a well-rounded offensive attack.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think the other thing we obviously have to talk about, the defensive line, they do it again. Bradley Chubb, two tackles for loss. He's second in the country in tackles for loss, third in sacks. He has a sack in that game as well. And Darius Bryant coming through with two sacks, a big play. I mean, that defensive line, beyond the four starters, you've got two pieces in Bryant and Roseboro that you can rotate in. And I think finally we're starting to see that element that maybe wasn't quite there at the start of the season, that they're really getting in the opposing backfields and putting pressure on these quarterbacks.
Yeah, and we always like to talk about Bradley Chubb, who is more than likely going to be a top 10 pick in next year's draft, that, you know, it's really just like a turnstile. It's an assembly line of these guys on the defensive line, that there's, you know, 5 to 6 guys that are NFL caliber players. I mean, you mentioned Darius Bryant, good to see him come up with a big game. B.J. Hill, Kentavious Street, Justin Jones, and Darian Roseboro. Guys are incredible. And these guys just completely stopped Lamar Jackson. They were, I mean, of course, he had that 427 yards, but he was under duress all night. He looked uncomfortable out of the pocket. And while you can't do much about Lamar Jackson getting outside of the pocket and getting those yards, that's what you'd rather have than him throwing bombs down the field. And NC State did that. They really shut him down in terms of his complete ability to make plays. And NC State got the job done against Lamar Jackson. And we're looking at a team that is really putting the ACC on notice as a contender in the ACC Atlantic Division.
Yeah, definitely with that. I think this is a team finally starting to show its potential, moves up to number 20 in the rankings, will have some opportunities on the schedule to move up even more. And to talk even more about what this win means for NC State and what we could see from this team going forward, we've got just a great guest for you guys this week, Joe Ovius, the co-host of the Adam and Joe Show on 99.9 The Fan, and a NC State WKNC alum himself is going to be joining us. So without further ado, let's take it to Joe. And guys, we have got another great guest for you this week. We are here with local radio host Joe Ovius of the Adam and Joe Show on 99.9 The Fan. Joe, got to bring back some memories for you being in here.
Yeah, actually, the last time I was in this particular studio inside WKNC, it was a production room. Not too dissimilar to this, but it was a lot more, it was messier. Let's just put it that way. They've cleaned it up a little bit since I was here when I graduated in 2001.
Well, it is certainly great to have you here. We appreciate you stopping by here today.
I'm just impressed there's still records up in here. It's 2017. I didn't think anybody actually still played records up here, but anyway.
Well, we definitely have a lot. This NC State football team has given us a lot to talk about with these two top 25 wins in 3 weeks, that big performance against Louisville last week. Your takeaways from that game?
Yeah, so the takeaway from that game against Louisville was that it was a more impressive win than what happened at Florida State. And I'm not trying to say, like, I'm not trying to make this like I wasn't being, you know, nothing was proven at Florida State. Don't get me wrong. Dave Doran needed that win in Tallahassee, because if you don't do that, given the opportunity that was available to you, considering that Florida State hadn't played in a couple of weeks because of the Hurricanes, that they were breaking in a new quarterback in James Blackman with DeAndre Francois out with a season-ending injury, that was their prime ready for you to take, okay? So that was the breakthrough. Except that what we hadn't seen out of NC State in a long time, and what we really hadn't seen out of Doran, was can you back it up? Can you step into a situation where not only you're no longer the underdog, you're going into a game that you should win, not just surprising people. And while Louisville was a slight favorite, the only reason why I think Louisville was a slight favorite in that game is because people simply respect Lamar Jackson, quarterback of Louisville. And you were there. Lamar Jackson, despite the fact that he had no backup, you know, in terms of his offensive line play, their defense isn't all that great, that was still a one-possession game late until they set it up and he was picked off with that tip play that sealed the game. So that was Under the Lights, ESPN, primetime, top 25 matchup. First time that's happened since Philip Rivers was here, okay, back in 2003 against Ohio State. That was a big moment game, and I thought they played one of their best games, even with some of the sloppiness. That's fine. I mean, they're not a perfect team, and that's fine, but they still found ways to step up when necessary, whether it was Nyheim Hines, Bradley Chubb, Ryan Finley continues to be great. Their wide receivers were making big plays. I thought it was an overall great game. Now they just got to keep it going. I mean, that's the thing. They just got to keep it going because their schedule really, really opens up nicely. Their two most difficult games remaining are a trip to Notre Dame and that game against that national title contender.
Oh, yeah,
Clemson.
That one.
Just that one. No big deal, right? There's no shame in losing to Clemson, by the way. There's no shame in losing to Clemson, but that's what they have left in front of them, and things are looking up for Dave Doran.
Yeah, and you mentioned a lot of firsts.
Sorry, I'm all over the mic. You guys have the same mics that we have at 99.9 The Fan, but we have to be on our mics.
Oh yeah,
that's
the
difference between the two. So anyway, sorry about that.
All right, it's good. Yeah, and
a little radio talk, shop talk while we're here.
But you mentioned a lot of firsts for the NC State Wolfpack. You know, of course, mentioning Philip Rivers. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a talented team, and it seems like everything's finally coming together for NC State. And you mentioned the two matchups against ranked teams, Notre Dame and Clemson coming up. Barring disaster, NC State should be going in ranked up into South Bend following a bye week. But going on just about how NC State has improved this season and what we've seen from them so far, especially against Louisville last mm-hmm. week, when's the last time you've seen an NC State team this talented and this good?
Off the top of my head, I can come up with three teams that were really talented, but for a variety of reasons, they couldn't necessarily break through. Obviously, there's the Chuck Amato, Philip Rivers, Gator Bowl season, where they had I think they got 11 wins that season with the win over Notre Dame? Sorry, I'm terrible with dates and my memory, and I blame college. But anyway, so that's the first one that comes to mind. The following one is Russell Wilson's last season before he transferred. And that was the year where all they had to do was beat Maryland to close out the season, and they would have won the Atlantic through tiebreaker. But because for whatever reason in the history of NC State football, even Philip Rivers never beat Maryland, right? For whatever reason, Maryland football always is like the spoiler for NC State. So they lost that game, and they were shut out of that situation. But Russell Wilson, I mean, you could see when he was here, even though nobody expected him to do that. Actually, I remember the first time I realized that Russell Wilson was legit and was going to be doing things was in that game against Miami. It was a day game against Miami. Miami wasn't very good, but they were also bigger and faster than NC State, but it wasn't necessarily a great Miami season. And he was breaking ankles on the field that day. It was really, really impressive. And then the other year would be, now again, every little thing, you know, they're not perfect teams. There was always something that didn't back it up. So for instance, when Philip Rivers was here, the reason why they couldn't get over to things like Ohio State might have been play calling or defense. Then you had the Mario Williams years, right, where they had this incredible defense under Chuck Amato, but they had no offense to back it up because they could never replace Philip Rivers. So I would say that those are the last two times or last three times that I've seen NC State really good and really talented. This fifth year under Dave Doran, this was the expectation. Make no mistake, Debbie Yao released a statement at the end of last season when they had to like put it out there that Doran wasn't going anywhere. And they closed out the season on a positive note. They beat Carolina. They won their bowl game. But she released a statement that was easy to read between the lines. Mm-hmm. Year five is the year. This is what they've built towards. This is what we've all had our eye on. And that's going to be the year that we make decisions or that we will judge. It didn't get off to a great start against South Carolina. And despite all the talent that we've talked about, they still did the little things that couldn't push them over the edge, whether it was turnovers, untimely penalties, that kickoff at the beginning of the game. I mean, those little things that we had seen the last 4 years under Dave Doran. But good, well-coached teams can overcome that, and their talent will eventually show itself. And if you're a good team, it'll eventually emerge. And we've seen that over the last couple of weeks. It's easy to try to take away from their victories. We mentioned Florida State earlier. They're what, 1-3 right now? Even though they're 1-3, they still might be Alabama's best win, but that's neither here nor there. In Louisville, all their problems, they were still a top 25 team, and Lamar Jackson can still win you games. So I don't want to take away too much from their victories because NC State hadn't done that stuff in the past, and it's really easy to lose those games. Now the question is, you know, now that you've broken through, now that you're feeling it, now that Dave Doran is talking that talk, and he's earned that right to talk, by the way. He's been banged on by the fans. He's been banged on by the media, myself included. I'm not going to shy away.
Ourselves included.
Okay, that's fine. Look, yeah. He hears that stuff. He gets it. So now that he's actually followed through on what he's been talking about, by all means, man, talk like Kanye would say, you know, like talk your blank. Okay, just do your thing. All right, so knock yourself out. Now the question, you know, now that you're here, though, don't do anything stupid. You know, like, don't lose to Pitt. Wake Forest is a good team. You could easily lose that game. And there have been better NC State teams that have lost to worse Wake Forest teams, okay? So don't do anything like that. And, oh, by the way, Boston College, for some reason, still vexes you. So there are still some stumbling blocks along the way that we can talk about Notre Dame and Clemson, but don't do anything dumb. Otherwise, those people that were banging on you earlier will say, well, here you are, doing the same things again.
Yeah, and I think speaking, you know, to the fans and their expectations, it seems like there's always this sense I get with NC State fans that they're so afraid to believe their team is good or say their team is good, whether it's believing in jinxes or curses or just not wanting to be let down. I mean, what would you say to fans when talking about whether or not to buy into what this team is doing?
That's a good question. When I was here between 97 and 01, you were talking about the tail end of the Mike O'Kane years and the beginning of the Herb Sendick years, and the lean Herb Sendick years when they were coming out of the Robinson era where they were the ninth game in the ACC tournament, or the ninth team in the ACC tournament. So there, you have to talk about this in generations, all right? Yeah. So the generation before mine was there with 83 and things like that, and Dick Sheridan coached football, which was good football, right, mm-hmm. back in the day before this modern era had taken over. So they remember this time in which they were really good, and they've been striving to get back to that. This, I mean, all you got to do is go to Emidio's on Western just to see the history, okay?
Big fan of Emidio's.
I love Emidio's, okay? So, but, you know, if you're a student who's listening to this podcast and you've never been, I implore you to go because it's a reminder of this is what NC State used to be, and you get a good idea of why the old heads, like, just pine away for those good old days, okay? And then you get to my generation, which those mid-90s to turn of the century stuff, which was lean, all right? Really, yeah, really, really lean, okay? And I don't understand why. I think that's where the whole NC State stuff started being born, was around that time, okay? The other thing, too, that was an interesting switch in 2001 especially is with Amato being here, Philip Rivers being here, Marianne Fox was a chancellor at the time, and basketball not being very good until Julius Hodge showed up. There was this thirst to be better than Carolina in something, and football presented that opportunity to them. They got a Florida State guy who used to coach here. They got a NFL caliber QB. The tailgating culture that you guys enjoy today was born over those 4 years when Philip Rivers was here. Because when I was here, when I was your guys' age, that did not exist, okay? Like, it just was not a thing. I mean, there was some tailgating, but it wasn't like you see today, which is like almost as more important to some people than the actual game to tailgate, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay? You'll see people, you know, file out after halftime.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the pass-out thing is a tale as old as time, and that's not going to. That's another conversation for another day that involves a lot of infrastructure work. So that time frame was lean, and I think that's where you started getting the NC State, we can't have nice things attitude, okay? And then through a series of bad hires, whether it's Sidney Lowe, you know, Mark Gottfried was a stopgap. He kind of like, you know, he did what he needed to do in that time. I think Debbie Yao has tried her darndest to put good coaches, young up and coming coaches in place to make NC State a consistent top 25 program. I think they got that right with Kevin Keats. And it could be that Dave Doran might be that guy, but Dave Doran might have other plans. So this idea that we can't have nice things is well rooted in a lot of mishaps. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, a lot of mishaps. A lot of that comes from basketball. I think it's more born in basketball than football, because you can't sit here and talk about how you can't have nice things in football because NC State has beaten Carolina a bazillion times. Yeah. All right. And they even have wild and wacky things. Like every time a Carolina fan talks about don't punt to Geo or something like that, you can just bring up, you know, the five in a row before that, whether it's over the course of Butch Davis, Everett Withers, or Larry Fedora, 2-yard Hail Marys from Russell Wilson and that sort of thing. So I think, long-winded way of answering your question here, is that, and I think it requires it because this isn't, that mentality isn't born over just a couple of years. This mentality has been built over the last 15 to 20 years. And it's going to take a consistent amount of success for this to kind of change. You know the best way to describe it? It's like Boston Red Sox fans before they started winning World Series. Okay. Mm-hmm. Their identity was being screwed.
Yeah.
You're always looking for a way to get screwed. That was your identity, whether you wanted to admit it or not, but it gave you life. It was another example of, see, again, we're so tortured. We're this, we're that. And another example of this happening to us.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy.
NC State essentially has taken on that same persona. But it can change, obviously, because the Red Sox have gone from lovable losers who were cursed to the expectation is you're supposed to win. NC State can change that over time.
Yeah. And final question while we have you here, Joe. Ryan Finley's play, in my opinion, has been spectacular to what I expected, at least. I was not expecting him to be able to throw the ball downfield as much as he has been. Mm-hmm. You know, looking at the 48-yard touchdown to Kelvin Harmon on Thursday, deep passes to Steph Lewis. I mean, I think he's made a lot of progression over just the offseason. And to kind of put him in the ranks of the greats between Phillip Rivers and Russell Wilson, not, I mean, he's not there, of course, but
yeah.
I'm saying that, you know, what does this mean for Ryan Finley and just the offensive attack for NC State and looking at how well he has played in the first half of the season?
Okay, so
he is nowhere near Phillip Rivers and
right.
Russell Wilson.
With Phillip and Russell, there was clearly something special when you watch them. And I'm not saying this as a knock to Ryan Finley. Ryan Finley, actually, I'll use a phrase that Steve Logan, who does a lot of former East Carolina head football coach who does radio with us on The Fan, I'll use his terminology. He's a smooth operator, okay? He can really run your offense. The question is,
he's a little bit better than a game manager.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Oh, no, he can make all, yeah, don't get me wrong. He's a smooth operator. The question is, to me, it wasn't necessarily about Ryan Finley. It was playmakers. Who are the playmakers? What's the play calling? Are they going to utilize Jalen Samuels? You know, those types of things. Were they going to be able to find a replacement at running back? Were Nyheim Hines and Gillespie going to be able to step up?
And he's become, I think Hines has become the X factor.
Yeah, he has been. It's always about, like, it's not just a single thing, okay? Mm-hmm. Phillip Rivers was able to put balls in places that were sidearm, by the way, that you're like, how? How did that happen? Russell Wilson was able to make plays with his feet and then have the accuracy to still make the throw after the fact. He wasn't just running around and relying on his feet all the time. He was relying on his feet, and you still see it today in the NFL, to make plays happen, to make accurate throws. Finley, to me, is more of a efficient, consistent pass machine.
You know,
the question was, was there anything dynamic about this offense? And there wasn't. There was nothing dynamic about that offense last year. Nothing about it. But in that game against Louisville, you actually started to see it pop up. Big time catches, big time runs. They got a little cute. in that first series. I don't know why they're doing gadget plays in the red zone. Go with what works, okay? But second guessing offensive coaches is, you know, that's an old time that's a pastime for everybody. But am I making sense though? Like, yeah. he's gonna land on an NFL team, and he's gonna have a nice long career in the NFL. Is he gonna be a franchise QB? No, but if he's on the right team, I'll use Kirk Cousins as a prime example of this. There's nothing wrong with Kirk Cousins. But when Scott McLuhan, before he was unceremoniously fired by the Washington Redskins, built an offense around him that was based on timing, wide receivers getting open, hitting your guys, moving it down the field, where they got a little dicey is when they got into the red zone when everything got tight, right? I think Finley is better in those situations. That's where I see him going. He's going to be a nice, efficient, smooth QB in the NFL, but he's not going to be one of these guys that we're talking about on the same level as an Aaron Rodgers,
right,
or anything like that, or even Russell Wilson or Philip Rivers. He's just going to have a nice, productive NFL career.
You know, that's the first comparison I've heard really to Kirk Cousins, but it makes sense. I was thinking more of maybe a little more versatile Alex Smith.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of game manager, that short little dink-a-dunk throw.
Yeah, I know. Game manager, for whatever reason, game manager has kind of garnered this negative connotation. There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan. I definitely appreciate what a good game manager can bring to the
table.
Does
Alex Smith throw the ball deep at all?
This year, he's averaging 8.8 yards per attempt.
I guess
he's
been doing it this year. That's a big leap.
That is a big leap for him.
Yeah.
But Alex Smith and Kansas City, all that notwithstanding, I do have one last question for you, Joe. What this season, for the rest of this season, what do you expect to see out of this team? What, if you had to kind of handicap it, what do you think this team ends up doing?
Okay, I think this team ends up... Ooh. This is where the NC State stuff starts creeping into my mind. I wanna retire it, but it does. I know. It's out there, and I've seen these things so many times. I don't know. No, I think an ideal situation is they take care of business throughout. They go to Notre Dame and win, but they lose to Clemson. There's no shame in that. Okay, that team's gonna go to.
That's another national championship contender.
So essentially, where I see I think a reasonable thing for NC State, given the way they've played, is to at least be in the discussion for a New Year's Six bowl game, okay? In the discussion. The problem that they're going to have is, even with a loss to Clemson, let's say they go to Notre Dame and win, even with a loss to Clemson, that gives them two, and one of those losses to a bad South Carolina team. And that's going to kind of hold them back, and you're going to have to wait for other things to break your way. The fact that Florida State isn't very good is going to help them, but you got to see what happens in the Coastal to see who gets into the New Year's Six, because both Miami and Virginia Tech still are primed to have really nice seasons, plus they have the pedigree and fan bases, well, not Miami, but they're a TV draw that could get them involved in the New Year's Six game. So that, I think that's a reasonable way to look at the rest of the year. Don't do anything dumb. Steal one in South Bend. Be competitive against Clemson. Prove yourself. And then at least be in the discussion for a New Year's Six bowl.
I think I can't speak for the entire fan base, but I think NC State fans would definitely be pretty happy with that outcome.
The question that you now have to ask, though, going forward, if NC State wins like this to go the rest of the year, the question then becomes, does Dave Doran want to stick around? I mean, because there could be jobs that become available that might be of more interest to him. I mean, heck, Nebraska is probably looking for a new head coach at the end of the day. So that might pop up. I mean, you never know where these things are going to go. I'm not saying that's going to happen. It's just that it's that odd dynamic of, man, we need another guy, we need another guy, we need another guy. Okay, now he's winning, but then somebody else might want him or something like that. So that's going to be another little interesting storyline to keep an eye on if they win the way I was talking about them winning.
Yeah, that would definitely be something interesting to see, and we'll hope that wouldn't be the case. But like you said, you never know.
Never know.
But it is. It's been great chatting NC State football with you here today, Joe. Thank you so much for coming in and volunteering your time for our show.
Yeah, anytime.
Nick, that was excellent. Joe is somebody who is a student here. He's been around NC State for a long time. He's covered the team. He's interacted with NC State fans. Really understands the workings of this team and this fan base, and had some great insights to share with us.
Yeah, Joe, one of the best in the business. Love his show, Adam and Joe on 99 The Fan. Listen to it, you know, a couple times a week. I mean, he's, of course, got great analysis. He's been in the business for a long time, a WKNC alum, and, of course, great analysis following that Louisville win.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just think that he's one of those guys that's just always going to have something interesting to say that you maybe haven't thought of. And one thing he did talk about that this NC State team needs to do the rest of the year is don't do anything dumb. In other words, take care of business in the games that you should win to set yourself up with those opportunities against like a Notre Dame or a Clemson. NC State's got one such opportunity this week in the game at Pitt, probably a game they should win. I believe you've done a little pre-scouting work on the Panthers, Nick.
Yeah, you know, when Joe talks about just taking care of business and doing anything dumb, it starts next week, this upcoming Saturday, against the Pittsburgh Panthers. Pittsburgh had a great year last year with James Conner coming back from a leukemia treatment, and had a great year last year, but now the Pittsburgh Panthers are definitely in rebuilding mode. Currently 2-4 overall in the year, 0-2 in the ACC. Lost to the NC State Wolfpack beat the previous week to the Syracuse Orange last week, 27-24. Pittsburgh led for the majority of that game, actually, into the third quarter. But then after quarterback Max Brown went down with injury, things kind of slowed down a little bit. But yeah, Pittsburgh, they've had one of the tougher schedules in the country, losing to number 4 Penn State, 33-14, and then number 9 Oklahoma State, 59-21. So, yeah, Pittsburgh on the wrong end of some losses this year, but I really think this is where it begins for NC State this week, and that this is a game where you're favored by over a touchdown. NC State's favored by 12 points in this game, and this is where you just need to really dominate your opponent and take care of business and move on to the next one.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be important for NC State not to look ahead, but this is one they should be able to take care of. I mean, you can make an argument despite a 1-5 Carolina team, because that's a Carolina team that's played some good teams, that Pitt could be the worst team in the ACC. I mean, they're getting outscored 6.5 points per game.
And that's including like a 42-10 win against Rice the previous week before Syracuse. So, yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I don't think Pitt is that good. I really don't. And that's saying something following, you know, looking at UNC's 1-5 record.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is a game that NC State, if you lose this game, like it's kind of like Joe said, if you lose this game, all of the critics of Dave Doran, of this football program, the NC State stuff, all of that just comes swooping right back in. So this is definitely not a time to lose focus and lose sight of what's in front of you.
And the thing is, it's that when I was scouting this team and looking at the offensive firepower they have, looking at the defense, there's not a lot there. And quarterback Max Brown is 10th in the conference with 997 passing yards, 5 touchdowns, 2 picks, only 5 touchdowns on the year for him, and that's really after he won the starting job over backup quarterback Ben DiNucci, and he got most of those touchdowns in a drubbing of Rice, 42-10, I believe it was. So not a lot of offensive firepower for Pittsburgh, and I just really think they're going to have a tough time against that NC State defense. And when I was thinking, all right, you know, let's look at the wide receivers for Pitt, and there's not a lot there. You know, leading wide receiver only at 300 yards. They don't have a lot of offensive firepower, and their defense not looking that hot either. You know, if I had to look for someone to step up for Pitt, it would be Quadri Wilson. I mean he's averaging 4 yards an attempt, but he's 22nd in the ACC in rushing yards. 22nd, and you know that's behind, you know, a lot of backup running backs, like looking at Cam Akers for Florida State, just to mention a name. He's a backup to Jacques Patrick down at Florida State, and he's got more rushing yards than the starting running back for Pittsburgh. So not a lot of offensive firepower for Pittsburgh, and you hate to say this, but NC State matches up perfectly against Pitt in that they have a great rush defense. Their secondary isn't that hot, and Pittsburgh's quarterbacks right now are struggling a little bit, especially that Max Brown, according to the Pittsburgh Panthers, will be out at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I would say that this is definitely a game for the NC State defense to shine, and really on offense too. I mean, they have linebacker, I hope I'm saying this right, Oluwaseun Idowu.
Yeah, that's correct.
With 2 sacks, 48 tackles, 1 interception for that Pitt defense. Other than that, not a whole lot there. This is a game NC State should be able to move the ball well on offense, run the ball, move the chains, kill the clock, let Finley take some shots downfield. Really, this is just one the Pack shouldn't have a problem taking care of business. So with that in mind, your prediction for this one, Nick?
You know, kind of really just rushing through the Pittsburgh analysis, but I mean, to be totally honest, fans, this is really all there needs to be talked about. I think Ryan Finley in this game is honestly not going to be throwing the ball that much. I think that they're probably going to try and get Gillespie a little more involved in the offense, trying to get him some reps, while Nyheim Hines has looked incredible this year, especially in the past three games with 100-yard, with incredible outings against Florida State and Syracuse, and of course Louisville, two touchdown performance from him. They gotta get Gillespie involved a little bit there. I think this is a game where Ryan Finley could honestly sit the entire fourth quarter. I think this is going to be an NC State field day up at Pittsburgh at Heinz Field. NC State opening as 12-point favorites, and I think that will increase as the week progresses. I'm gonna go NC State 41, Pittsburgh 20.
I'm going to go around that. I definitely agree with you that this is going to be, I don't want to say an easy day for the Pack, but this is not one that they should have to sweat too much. I'm going to go 48-17 NC State. I really just think the thing that encouraged me a lot about this team as well is them avoiding the letdown against Syracuse. I don't see any issues with a letdown after that big emotional win over Louisville. I think they go up there, they take care of what they need to do, and they win handily.
Yeah, and I don't think this is a trap game like Syracuse. I really don't. I think this is just one of those games where NC State should win, and I think they actually will win and not worry about the spread. NC State, I think it's 2-4 this year against the spread. I think they actually cleared the spread this game and by a healthy margin. This is a game where NC State doesn't necessarily need to be in the driver's seat and just keep attacking. I think they might be scoring the 30 points up until the third quarter and going into the driver, just putting it in cruise control after that. But NC State, this game, just take care of business and then get a rest. Get a nice bye week, get a rest, and then going into South Bend against a big matchup against Notre Dame. That's really what NC State needs to be looking forward to after this Pittsburgh game.
Nick, do me a favor. Next NC State football game or media availability you cover, ask Dave Doran how much he cares about beating the spread. I think you'd get a pretty entertaining response.
Yeah, of course, you know, he could care less about that. A win is a win, but yeah. NC State, if they don't clear this spread of 12 points, I'll be incredibly surprised.
Yeah, I would be too, and that is going to about wrap us up for this week. I'm your host, sports editor Andrew Schnicker.
And I'm your assistant sports editor Nick Sinopoli.
Thanks for listening, guys.